This is the QTR podcast number 11. Today is March 30th, 2018, and I have found what I believe to be definitive proof that we are completely doomed as a society. So, hope you have a nice holiday weekend, and sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings, but we're all doomed. With that being said, does anybody really understand what the controversy has been with Stormy Daniels? I mean, I don't really understand this whole situation. I mean, or maybe the problem is I do understand it. But for the last 6 weeks, this country has seen nothing but Stormy Daniels in the mainstream media, right? This woman had an affair with the now president, Donald Trump, in the year 2006, which was 12 years ago, or 11 and a half years ago, whenever it happened. He was married at the time, which was totally fucked up and uncool thing to do, to cheat on his wife. And, you know, that is a private, personal problem he'll have to deal with and handle with his family. And she, I don't know if she was single at the time, but it doesn't really matter, because I'm sure that she knew he was married at the time. And these two had consensual sex 11 years ago, and at some point during the presidential campaign in 2016, it's argued how this happened, but at some point the woman got $130,000 to keep her mouth shut about the affair, and now this has turned into some giant media news story, but I don't really understand what the controversy is. Because to me, turning on the news this morning, it seemed like they were arguing over whether or not the president knew that his lawyer had paid this woman $130,000 to not talk about this affair. Is that it? Is that the controversy? Donald Trump knew that he paid a woman off to keep her mouth shut, signed some like non-disclosure agreement about this whole relationship, and that was it? I mean, I just don't understand what the big deal is. Why is this a huge news story? I mean, it's horrible that he cheated on his wife. It's a terrible thing. You know, he needs to find his moral compass. I don't know that he will, but it's disturbing, you know, and she has been married, I think, three times also as well. And she said in her most recent interview with Anderson Cooper that she was 27 and he was 60 at the time. And she didn't find him terribly attractive. But somehow she wound up in the same room as him. And she decided consensually she was going to have sex with him. So both of them need their moral compasses adjusted. It was a bad decision on both of their parts, right? He was having an affair. She was, at best, sleeping with somebody who had a wife. And she said she wasn't attracted to him. So my next question would have been, you know, well, why did you sleep with him? What was your motive? If you weren't attracted to him, what was your motive? Rich old fuck sleeps with 27-year-old porn star. I'm not saying that what Trump did isn't despicable, because it is. But I know what his motivation was. You know, he's 60 years old, and this woman is 27, and possesses many traits commonly sought after by the superficial male. So I know what his motivation was, and like I said, completely despicable thing to do, and just awful. But how come nobody is asking this woman, what was your motivation? I mean, 27 years old, it wasn't like she was 18 years old. 27 years old is an adult, right? So why wasn't it asked of her what her motivation was? And I think we're starting to kind of see what her motivation might be. And I think that's why this is turning into this enormous news story, when really there isn't anything there. You have a guy who cheated on his wife with a younger woman. They had consensual sex, and, you know, he did something horrible and her motives were suspect. And so the whole thing is this ugly kind of gross cesspool of a situation, but that's it. I mean, where's the controversy? The controversy is that he asked her to sign some type of non-disclosure agreement, or, you know, hush money, whatever the hell they want to call it. heading into the presidential campaign because they didn't want this thing unearthed. I mean, I don't even know why they even care. Everybody just assumes Trump cheats on his wife. I mean, I know I know that's not like, it's not a very nice thing to say, but I mean, you poll 99 out of 100 people that are have no political affiliation and you say, is Donald Trump a womanizer? The answer is going to be yes. So it's not like it's totally unexpected. Of course, that doesn't make it right. But I don't understand what the controversy is. I mean, there is, when you look at something like the Billy Bush Access Hollywood tape that leaked, okay, that tells you everything you need to know about Trump's attitude towards women. It's despicable.
Mr. Treehorn treats objects like women.
But I just don't understand why this is 6 weeks worth of news. It, you know, now we're arguing about all of the little nuances and little details surrounding whether or not she was paid hush money or whether or not he executed a contract about it. If he signed it, if he didn't sign it, if she signed it, she's suing him, he's suing her. Why does this whole thing, first off, why does the whole thing come to light again, right? Well, if you want my opinion of the matter, she's trying to get paid. She's trying to make something of this. I'm not defending Donald Trump, and I'm not defending her. I'm anti the entire situation, and I'm bringing it up not for any type of political purpose, but for the purpose of trying to figure out why the media is wasting so much time on this. I just don't get it. I was listening to the radio this morning on my way back from grabbing a coffee, and they were having a, they were replaying an interview of Megyn Kelly interviewing, I think it was Trump's lawyer. If it wasn't Trump's lawyer, it was somebody who was defending Trump's side of the case. And the guy was arguing to Megyn Kelly that Trump didn't know that she was paid this $130,000 to keep quiet about this during the campaign. And Megyn Kelly is giving this guy the business. By the way, it's amazing how a new contract at a new television station changes your attitudes on politics. I mean, Megyn Kelly is a completely different person than she was when she was at Fox News. That's a whole other story that we have to talk about after this. I mean, that's just disingenuous and really shouldn't make anybody feel good, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. Give me a slimy feeling, you know? But anyways, so Megyn Kelly is saying to this guy, you know, we don't believe you. Nobody here believes that that's true, that the president didn't know or that the president didn't give the order to pay this woman off. And the guy is arguing back to Megyn Kelly, look, he's saying Trump's lawyer paid this woman out of his pocket. He just figured he would deal with it and then he would, you know, square it up with the president later or whatever. They have a cozy relationship. They both have a lot of money. $130,000 isn't anything. Blah, 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 blah. So they're arguing about this thing with one another. And I'm listening to the clip of this interview as I'm driving home. And I'm like, why is any of this news? Who gives a shit? Who cares? Of course Trump knew. I mean, can we just fucking get real for a second? Of course he knew. Of course he knew. The lawyer goes, you know, pays this woman $130,000 out of her own pocket. I mean, that's an asinine story. That's something you say when you're lying. I mean, and this is like one of those times where you get caught in a lie, but you just keep lying because you don't really have any other outs. So you know you're going to lose, but you just want to stick to your argument and go down with the ship. You know, like that violin player on the Titanic who knew the thing was going down and the ship had already capsized, but he was only 4 minutes away from finishing Beethoven's Ninth Symphony or whatever they were playing. And instead of freaking out and panicking and looking for a life vest, he just kept playing the fucking violin and said, I'm going to finish my song and then I'm going to die, you know. And this argument that Trump had no idea that this woman was paid is akin to that. This guy is just holding on to this lie just because it's the only thing he's got to hold on to. But there may not be any proof that Trump authorized this or said it was a good idea. But, you know, certainly I don't think a lawyer goes and acts on his client's behalf in that manner without consulting the client. I could be wrong. I'm not a lawyer. just a regular guy from Philadelphia trying to apply some common sense to a asinine situation. But do we really believe that? Regardless of the fact that I think this guy is lying, the last person I want to hear challenge this guy is Megyn Kelly. Up there like she's Joy Behar, you know, getting in this lawyer's face. Do you really think that we believe that? Do you really think that anybody believes that? I mean, you're insulting our intelligence by saying anybody believes that. You know, like, I don't agree with Joy Behar, but at least I know Joy Behar is through and through way on the left and is a liberal, and she sticks to her convictions. So, if I'm watching the news and a clip of The View comes on, I know what to expect from Joy Behar. Stand tall, stand proud in your convictions, whatever they are. You know, look, I'm a libertarian, okay? I support people's right to have whatever convictions they want. But you can't tell me that if this was 3 years ago and Megyn Kelly was still on Fox News, that she would not be pushing the Trump administration line on this. Because she definitely would. She wouldn't be up in this guy's face. She wouldn't be challenging him. And now she's sitting up there all indignant, you know, horrified that this guy would come on television and say that. All of these news networks have a script that they stick to. And for the most part, I'm okay with it. It's nice to kind of be able to check in with Fox News and then check in with CNN or MSNBC and get both sides of the story. How's the left reporting this? How is the right reporting this? There's things I agree with the left on. There's things I agree with the right on. And for the most part, if you look at somebody like Bill O'Reilly, okay, I know he's not on Fox News anymore, but do I believe that Bill O'Reilly spoke about what his actual personal convictions were? Sure. Sure. I believe that he's probably the same guy off the air than he is on the air, just in terms of ideologically, you know, his political convictions. And you look at Rachel Maddow. I mean, when she gets off the air, do you think she is some moderate or some right-winger? No, I think the Rachel Maddow that's on MSNBC is probably the same Rachel Maddow that walks around off the air, at least from a political ideology standpoint. So I'm okay with these people reporting what they think because I believe that, you know, in other words, I'm okay with them reporting what the station script is because I think in most cases they believe it. But in the case of Megyn Kelly, to watch her just flip-flop like that and go from, you know, being far on the right to now being surrounded by a group of liberals as she's interviewing this lawyer and acting all high and mighty about this bullshit that line that this guy is trying to deliver. I mean, I agree with her that the guy is spouting off bullshit. But I want her, you know, quote-unquote outrage to come by it honestly. And you can't convince me that 3 years ago, if this interview happened on Fox News, she wouldn't be sitting there agreeing with the guy. You know, yeah, it's possible. You know, it's possible. A lot of times lawyers act on behalf of their clients. You know, it's in the client's best interest. I could see her helping deliver that line. But I don't know. There was something about it that just rubbed me the wrong way. Lest we forget, ladies and gentlemen, that none of this should really be a news story. I mean, was she paid $130,000? Was she not paid $130,000? Did she sign the document? Did he sign the document? Who cares? Who cares about any of this shit? None of it is news. They're both gross for doing this. Okay? It was a stupid decision on both of their parts. And now we're caught up in this, you know, as they said on Seinfeld, excruciating minutia of the details of a contract. And he said, she said, and now they're both suing each other. And it's just like, who cares? What effect does this have on me when I get up in the morning and I make my coffee and I hop into my Honda and I drive to work and I do my work and then I come home? What does this have to do with anything? Why do I care? Well, I don't care. But now I'm starting to care by virtue of the fact that I can't believe it's news. I feel like it's this enormous waste of time. So as this situation is playing out, we have the New York Post in the beginning of February writes a beautiful article on none other than the Plunge Protection Team. Now, the New York Post is not necessarily well known for its financial journalism, but a guy named John Crudell writes this great article on February 7th, and it's entitled, Washington May Have Had a Hand in Keeping Dow Meltdown from Being a Complete Disaster. And the article basically talks about the Plunge Protection Team, or, as it is actually known, the President's Working Group on Financial Markets. That is the name of the actual organization. So when people talk about the Plunge Protection Team, they're talking about the President's Working Group on Financial Markets. And the article throws out an argument that I and many others have been arguing for a long time. And that is that the Federal Reserve is rigging the stock market, which has been my opinion for a long time. And you don't need to be a PhD economist from Yale to figure this one out. All you have to do is watch how the market trades. And in this article, there's a great line. Heller suggested that the Fed, through I suspected its favorite brokerage houses, would purchase stock index futures contracts as a way to stop a market collapse in its tracks. Heller said that since the Fed already rigs the bond market through securities purchases, the stock market would be easy to control. Nobody has ever proven that the Fed and its friends actually protect Wall Street against plunges. It is, you might say, the Loch Ness monster of the financial world. People get glimpses of something, but they never see a clear picture. Which is very true, by the way. The article continues, that's what happened during the financial crisis of 2007 and 2008. Telephone records I obtained back then showed numerous calls between then Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson and contacts on Wall Street on days when the stock market was tanking and the decline needed to be stopped. The action in stocks on those days looked a lot like what happened this week. And again, this is early February of this year. Sharp reversals that came out of nowhere. Since then, other countries overtly rigged their stock markets. Japan and China don't even hide their actions. The U.S. plunge protectors are going to have their work cut out for them. Rigging the stock market works for a while, but if the equities markets are overpriced, eventually the bubble bursts. Okay, so this is a great article that draws what I believe to be a very obvious conclusion, and nobody notices it. It's not picked up anywhere. It's no topic of discussion. It's not on Fast Money on CNBC. It doesn't get picked up by CNN. Nobody cares. Nobody really. And to actually do you one worse than that, when Asher Edelman was on CNBC in the beginning of 2017, and he was talking about the Plunge Protection Team, they kind of gave him the business on Fast Money a little bit. Actually, I think they were actually quite nice to him. But the next day, there were several financial journalists who will remain nameless, who on the air and on their respective Twitter accounts really ridiculed him for saying that. And one person in the financial media specifically actually made a comment that the Plunge Protection Team doesn't exist, that the whole thing is one giant conspiracy theory. So let's just set the record straight. And the reason for my segue from Stormy Daniels into this, because we have all this bullshit in the news that nobody cares about. And now this is a real story. Is the stock market being rigged? I mean, obviously, Keynesian theory is rigging the economy in and of itself, and that includes all asset prices, like housing, like securities. But this would be another level of rigging on top of that, and one that would probably be a little bit more clear to the mom and pop on Main Street that may not understand, you know, macroeconomic theory. If we could prove that the Fed was buying S&P futures, it would be very clear that the stock market is just a rigged game. More so than it is already for many of us. But the point of bringing this up is, you know, we have 6 weeks of this insane news coverage about this woman, and she gives this big interview like there's going to be some big bombshell. And she sits there and says, yeah, we had consensual sex. All right. Like, is that it? Well, yeah, that's it. And a guy told me in a parking lot once not to talk about it. Ooh, great story. Ooh. There's no story there. NDA, non-NDA. Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? I mean, do you remember years ago there were reports that, like, Derek Jeter used to give women that he slept with a gift bag on the way home? He would bring these women back to his apartment, which I think actually was in Trump Tower at the time, believe it or not. And he would give these women like a goodie bag, like you would get when you go to a child's birthday party on the way home. And it would have like an autographed baseball in it and a handwritten note. Thank you for sleeping with Derek Jeter. We hope you enjoyed your stay. like he's the embassy suites, you know? Throwing out Derek Jeter frequent flyer miles and like women are going to earn Hilton rewards points for sleeping with Derek Jeter. But the report was that he used to make women, it was him or it was Alex Rodriguez, some athlete used to make women sign a non-disclosure agreement. And this was to prevent their, you know, this getting out and getting in the news and, you know, becoming negative press. And you have to put yourself in the shoes of an athlete, right? I don't want to defend the male in this situation, but if you have a lot of money and you're somebody that's well known, not all women are terrible and calculating, and not all men are great people. You know, in the case of Trump and Stormy Daniels, they were both awful people. But you have to assume that there's going to be some woman out there with malintentions going and trying to, you know, remember the woman that slept with Julian Edelman from the Patriots and then took a picture of him while he was sleeping and put it on the internet? I mean, that's horrible. It's a terrible thing to do to somebody. I'm not saying Julian Edelman's an angel, but I'm just saying that's a distasteful move. And so one of these athletes used to have women sign a non-disclosure agreement saying, hey, I won't talk about our sexual escapades together. And once you sign this, then we can do whatever we want. I don't think it's that crazy. You know, people sign prenuptial agreements all the time to avoid one another from having access to one another's money, to make sure that the intentions of going into these things are good on both ends. I mean, certainly, hopefully at some point you develop a relationship with somebody where you don't feel like these things are necessary. But if you're single and your lifestyle is you're an athlete and you like to party and you like to be promiscuous, I don't think it's a terrible idea, to be honest with you. I'll probably get killed for this. But, you know, this guy's protecting his ass. He's protecting his reputation. He's protecting his money. And if the woman has positive intentions and a good heart, then it's not a big deal. Right? You sign the thing and then you go and you enjoy your evening together with Derek Jeter or whoever it is. And I'm sure there's women that do the same thing. I'm sure the roles can be reversed. I'm sure there's female athletes who probably have done similar things to men, you know? So it's not a male and female thing here. It's just the principle of the situation. Is it a huge deal that he had this woman sign a non-disclosure agreement so as to prevent her from speaking about their horrifying yet 100% consensual sexual relationship? I don't think that's a huge deal. Now, is it a huge deal that the Federal Reserve could be in the stock market actively buying S&P futures? That seems like a much bigger deal to me. One of these two stories got a lot of news coverage over the last 6 weeks, and the other one didn't. So that is the purpose of my frustration today. We are spending so much time talking about so much pointless shit, and the wool is being pulled over the eyes of everybody out there at the same time. And people love it. People love to hear the story of Stormy Daniels over and over, and there's people at home right now thinking about, did his lawyer do it? Did she do it? Did he do it? Who's in the right? Who's in the wrong? Folks, who cares? Who cares? These are the same people that have money sitting in their 401k right now that is being actively managed and put into index funds that are part of a marketplace that is being manipulated not only by our general economic theory, but by, in my opinion, the Federal Reserve stepping in and propping up markets, leading us down a path that we don't know where it leads and we don't know what the result's going to be. And everybody is just fine with that. They're just dandy with that. Nobody mentions that on the news. As a matter of fact, as I was saying, Asher Edelman, when he talked about this on CNBC, he was ridiculed the next day about talking about the plunge protection team. I mean, there are people in the financial media that don't believe that the plunge protection team is a real thing. I mean, there's probably people listening to this podcast right now that think, what is the plunge protection team? I hear people talk about it on Twitter all the time. What is it? It's not a real thing. It's just a conspiracy theory, right? No, it's a real thing. It's called the President's Working Group on Financial Markets. It was created by Executive Order 12631. It was signed on March 18th, 1988, by United States President Ronald Reagan. And what was the point of the president's working group on financial markets? Why was this even established? Well, it actually says in the executive order, recognizing the goals of enhancing the integrity, efficiency, orderliness, and competitiveness of our nation's financial markets and maintaining investor confidence. What do you think that means, maintaining investor confidence? The working group shall identify and consider the major issues raised by numerous studies on the events in the financial markets surrounding October 19, 1987, and any of those recommendations that have the potential to achieve the goals noted above, and the actions, including governmental actions under existing laws and regulations, such as policy coordination and contingency planning, that are appropriate to carry out these recommendations. The working group shall consult, as appropriate, with representatives of the various exchanges, clearinghouses, self-regulatory bodies, and with major market participants to determine private sector solutions wherever possible, and the working group shall report to the president initially within 60 days and periodically thereafter on its progress and, if appropriate, its views on any recommended legislative changes. Well, what does that sound like? How do you maintain investor confidence? I mean, this is right from the executive order. And who does the working group consist of? Was Asher Edelman completely full of shit during his interview on CNBC when he said that the group existed? No, he was right. Was he full of shit when he said the group consisted of the Secretary of the Treasury or the Chair of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System or the Chair of the SEC or the Chair of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission? No, he was 100% accurate. That's who the group consists of. The Secretary of the Treasury, Chairperson of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, Chairperson of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the Chairperson of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. So folks, the plunge protection team is not a conspiracy theory. It's just a theory. I mean, its existence is real. The working group issued a statement indicating in 2008 that it was taking multiple actions available to it in order to attempt to stabilize the financial system, although purchase of stock shares was not part of the statement. So in 2008, the plunge protection team came out and said that it was taking multiple actions available to it in order to attempt to stabilize the financial system. Stabilize the financial system and maintain investor confidence. How do you think it does that? You think it's just from Janet Yellen going in front of Congress and saying everything's okay? Does that do it? Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't think that the government or the Federal Reserve is buying S&P futures, then you just haven't been paying attention. I mean, every single time we have a profound downward move in the market, every time. Let's just look at the recent examples. The night that Trump was elected, the markets got shellacked, bid all the way back up and finished in the green. I think the Dow futures were down 900 at one point. They got bid all the way back up and the market closed the next day up 300 points. Perfectly normal, perfectly healthy. Congratulations, dip buyers. The system worked, right? How about a couple years ago when the Chinese market crashed and all of a sudden, I think it was the China A-share market crashed. We had the same exact thing. We had a big sell-off in U.S. equity markets. A couple days later, everything was back to normal. How about Brexit? After Brexit happened, markets crashed. What happened? A couple days later, everything back to normal. So you either have to believe that neither of these three major events were enough to legitimately shake investor confidence to the point where the market would actually go down, or you would have to believe that somebody's in there propping up the market or preventing it from too much capitulation or too much of a drawdown or whatever they want to call it. So there's no doubt as to whether or not the plunge protection team is real. The only thing that we haven't been able to definitively prove is that they are in the market buying S&P futures. The closest thing I have gotten to proof is I heard a story from somebody who I trust implicitly, who is a hedge fund manager on Wall Street, manages over $1 billion, told me a story about a cocktail party he was at with one of the Fed presidents who was there and had a bit to drink, who openly admitted to doing this. Now, I don't know whether or not that story is true, but it was told to me by somebody that I trust, and I kind of believe him. It's not that big of a stretch. We print money to buy government bonds. We manipulate the shit out of the bond market. So what is to stop us from just manipulating the stock market? Really? What? It's not that big of a stretch, folks. We know the plunge protection team exists. We know that it says in the executive order that their job is to maintain investor confidence. We know that the Treasury Secretary and the head of the Fed and the head of the Futures Trading Commission are all on this plunge protection team. We know that they have contact with a lot of the big banks. We know that they're close with a lot of the heads of the big banks, I'm sure. We know that the New York Post just reported in the beginning of February that Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson was contacting a lot of the heads of a lot of the major investment banks, specifically on days when the market was heading lower. We know that the Federal Reserve is active in the bond market and has manipulated the bond market to, you know, really no end, at the same time increasing the size of their balance sheet by trillions. We know all these things to be true. The last little dot that we have to connect is the Fed in there monkeying around with the whatever, with the SPOOS futures, with the equity markets? Are they in there somehow? I mean, we know that this whole system exists on monetary theory and economic theory that really seems to be a mathematical impossibility. We can just keep printing money and inflation will make sure that prices go up and things can't get too expensive and we can't take on too much debt and confidence is always going to be there and everything's going to be fine. And we know this because, well, this is theory we've never tested in practice before and we are about 50 years into an experiment that we don't know how it's going to end. So we're okay with all those things. We're okay with the plunge protection team existing. We're okay with the Fed buying bonds. We're okay with this monetary policy that makes no sense at all. We're okay with bailing out the banks and not giving the bailout money to the citizens. We're okay with privatizing profits and socializing losses. And we know that the stock market always goes up. I mean, here we are. This is the present. We're as far along in history as we can get. And where is the stock market? It's very close to all-time highs. What does that mean? It means that no matter what has happened prior to this, the market has only gone up. We are the highest we have been since the stock market has started. So knowing all these things, is it that big of a stretch to think that the Fed might be in there buying some S&P futures? Not at all. So don't let the financial media or people that shill for the Fed's line or people that shill for the status quo go out there and make you feel like an idiot for thinking things like this. Because it's just common sense. It's common sense in the same way that it's common sense that our current monetary policy is going to have to fail at some point. I mean, we're not doing some type of intricate calculation here. We're not trying to split the atom. I'm not trying to, you know, do something that is beyond the realm of human understanding. The point that I'm trying to make is fairly simple, right? I mean, it's not that big of a long shot to think that this plunge protection team exists and that this is what they do. And it's not that big of a long shot to think that at some point our monetary policy is going to fail. So why do we even call it a market? I mean, it's anything but free market capitalism, which is what I'm an advocate for. It's fake capitalism. It's crony capitalism. It's engineered productivity. It's a big smokescreen. And it's all hidden by the fact that the stock market is at all-time high. So everybody that is participating in this, whether it's the presidential administration at the time or the Federal Reserve, can point to the stock market and say, everything's fine. Stocks are at all-time highs. The stock market and the economy, like this, you know, 1970 Pinto with 400,000 miles on it. Every time something else breaks, we just reattach it with some duct tape. We'll go in, we'll buy some bonds, everything will be fine. We'll do QE1, QE2. We'll never do QE3. Now we're going to do QE3. We'll never do QE4. We're tightening. QE4 is coming, folks. I got news for you. Okay? And we just keep patching up the problems and duct taping this pile of shit, this jalopy, back together just so we can keep traveling, so we can keep driving down the road. But at some point, this Pinto is just going to stop running. And like it does in the movies, as soon as that happens, the axle's going to fall out from underneath the car, and the doors are going to fall off, the steering wheel's going to fall off, the tires are going to roll off, and then the car is just simply going to burst into flames. Because you can only push these things so far. So if you want to talk about some real news, why don't we start looking into things like, why does the stock market only go up? I mean, again, it's not a market. We shouldn't really call it that. It's a rigged game. But nobody cares. I mean, maybe you do, and that's why you're listening to this podcast instead of sitting in front of your television watching Jim Cramer slam red buttons that make a thing scream buy about a stock with a PE of 45 right now. Maybe that's why you're listening to me. Maybe you give a shit. I mean, I do. This is one of those things, though, that if you think about it too much, it will actually drive you clinically insane. And my goal is to not turn into Alex Jones, you know, and just go completely off the deep end. The fucked up thing is that Alex Jones probably gets like 15% of what he says is probably 100% accurate. The rest is complete insanity. But he is a guy who has gone off the deep end. He was probably onto a few things. He's probably right about some things, but when you obsess about it the way that he does, it'll just kill you. It'll fry your brain. So I have some days where it really gets to me and some days where it doesn't. But driving home this morning, listening to that interview, listening to Megyn Kelly try to, you know, get in the face of Trump's lawyer and give this guy the business, like she had the moral high ground as she was sitting there flip-flopping on whatever her position would have been if she was on Fox News, just made me think, you know, why is this story even news? And when is somebody going to have legitimate outrage about how the stock market and how the economy is being manipulated versus giving a shit about what some adulterer and some porn star with bad intentions did consensually in a hotel room somewhere? I started off this podcast by saying we're all doomed. And that's how I'm going to finish this podcast also. We're all doomed. And with that, have a nice Easter or a nice Passover. Enjoy going home to your families. Have a glass of wine for me. And I have a lot of great interviews scheduled for next week, including one with Ross Gerber from Gerber Kawasaki. We're going to be talking Tesla with my friend Adam Spittler, who is a distressed credit specialist. So that should be a spirited debate and great interview that hopefully I'll be able to put up probably Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. But while you're waiting for that, I hope sincerely that you guys have a great holiday weekend and that everybody gets some good quality time in with their family and their friends, gets a lot of good food to eat, has a couple glasses of wine, and relaxes. And I will catch you back next week.